from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today we look back at the floods of 2008 through the eyes of author Stephen Lyons. Lyons' new book, The 1,000-Year Flood, examines the epic events of 2 years ago and how the city of Cedar Rapids has attempted to rebound from the devastation. Also, we look at the southeast Iowa town of Oakville and its efforts to recover after major flooding in 08 nearly wiped out the entire community. Were you affected by the floods? How's your recovery? Join our conversation as we look back at the floods of 08. First, this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The catastrophic floods of this summer that we've been reporting on in Ames, Des Moines, Colfax, bring to mind the tremendous loss and suffering from the floods of 2008. It's been 26 months since the second 500-year flood in the Midwest in 15 years and the fifth worst state disaster in the history of the United States. We dedicate this hour to looking back at the floods of 2008 and the recovery efforts in Cedar Rapids. Towards the end of the hour, we talk with the mayor of the southeast Iowa town of Oakville about its efforts to recover after major flooding in 08 that nearly wiped out the entire community. But first, we focus on recovery 26 months on in Cedar Rapids. Joining me now for the first part of the hour, Stephen Lyons, with us, in fact, for the entire hour, author of The 1,000-Year Flood, Destruction, Loss, Rescue, and Redemption Along the Mississippi River. Joining us by phone, Stephen Lyons, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. Great to be on.
Also joining us, Linda Seeger, returns to our program, a flood-affected homeowner in Cedar Rapids, also a community activist. We'll learn how she became an activist in just a few minutes. Linda Seeger, welcome back to our program.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Also with us, Gary Ficken, owner of Bim Ritter Sportswear in Cedar Rapids and president of the Cedar Rapids Small Business Recovery Group. You'll tell us your story a little later on as well. Gary, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's turn to Stephen Lyons, author of The 1,000-Year Flood. You have a personal motivation to write this book. Tell us how you got into this task.
Well, my grandparents have strong roots in the Cedar Rapids area, especially in the Czech Village business district, as far as their shopping. All my aunts were born and raised there. My dad's from Marion, Iowa as well. So it was, a very secondary part of this book was to reconnect with those roots and try to imagine the flood from their perspective as well.
Mm-hmm. I was interested, very interested, in one of the chapters in your book where you use a term that people will react to, economic cleansing. You write about this and describe it in a section of your book. The floods brought misery, you say, but they also, others saw opportunity in the floods. Describe what you mean by economic cleansing in this case.
Well, this is a term I think that came out of the great citizens that I interviewed in the Time Check area. I think I first heard it from Frank King, who Linda knows well and we all know. And the idea was that you have a working-class neighborhood that, at first glance, and it's not even the accurate glance, was a point of a problem to have this neighborhood there, which was not the executive type of neighborhoods that seem to be preferred these days, where you drive in your garage, shut the garage, and don't know your neighbor. And the city, I think, saw an opportunity to put in a plan that they had already talked about that I think came out of the Grand Forks flood renewal area, and that was to put in green space, quote, green space, put in townhouses, condominiums, more, I think, for the new economic class that was moving in to work at Aegon and Rockwell Collins and stare at computer screens all day. It's a different type of economy than perhaps my grandfather grew up. He had sixth grade education, really couldn't read or write very much, but yet had a home on Fruitland Boulevard and had a job in the bus barn, which is down in the Time Check area along the river. So the city saw the flood, as in my interpretation, as a chance to really, quote, clean up the area and get it looking more like a modern city and take advantage of the waterfront more.
In regards to this Time Check neighborhood, which is one of the neighborhoods in Cedar Rapids, the one you're speaking of with, you know, pre-flood, working class family district, what actual documentation do you have from the city that states or points to the fact that the city was looking to push working class families out of this neighborhood?
Well, the economic cleansing, again, came from residents of Time Check. They certainly didn't come from the mayor's office. The mayor did tell me about the plan. I think it came out of Sasaki Architects, planners, that this was a plan that she liked and she was excited about to have this development in place. And then there are plans online on the computer that you can find that had a model of the community, what it would look like after it was cleaned up. Mm-hmm. It even had a Soho Cafe. I'm not sure what Soho has to do with Cedar Rapids, but at least the planners thought so.
In one way, we could call it revitalization. Another way of saying it would be gentrification. It's hard to know where that line is. I mean, how can you fault city officials, people for desiring a neighborhood that looks nicer, seems to function in a nicer way?
I certainly don't fault the city at all. That's just something that needed to be pointed out. And all the hubbub of Cedar Rapids is back and all of this. It was my goal, really, to tell the stories of people who were not feeling that Cedar Rapids was coming back.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, sorry.
And along that line, I mean, I came upon this design firm, Sasaki Associates, and they were hired out of Waterton, Massachusetts, to put the study into a feasible structure. And when the flood came, I think the city, what I understand, felt it was time to put these plans in place. Mm-hmm. Without really understanding the upheaval and the opposition from people like Linda and Frank and other people, this was their homes, this was their neighborhood. And a flood is never an opportunity. A flood is a disaster.
At the same time, we should be looking forward to mourn the past, mourn the loss, but then move on, right? Let's turn to Linda Seeger, a flood-affected homeowner, a community activist in the meantime. Tell us your story. It's quite moving, the way you and your husband's tragedy was recounted in the book, because you have an older home in the Time Check neighborhood, and until a few days before the flood, we're not worried at all about it, were you?
No, we weren't, and our story is so similar to hundreds of other people that were down in the Time Check area on the west bank of the river. And I will accept the responsibility for the term economic cleansing. I began using it early on, mainly because I needed a catchphrase that would catch people's attention to what was going on. And therefore, from this disaster, the more that I became involved in the FEMA work and everything we had to do to get our lives back on track, the more I realized that there were some plans being put in place that were prohibiting people to return to their homes. And one of the things was, really it appeared that no one was in charge. FEMA came on board. They were organized because, of course, they had the experience. But when it got down to the local level, that's when everybody was being confused and disoriented, and it came at a time when people were stressed to their maximum as far as losing their possessions, their homes, their financial status, and particularly in the areas along the banks of the river, both the west side and the east side in the residential areas, people were being denied access back to their property. That was the first time I really wanted to become more active in speaking out of what was happening to my fellow citizens.
Being denied access to their property physically or being bought out?
No, first of all, it was what we thought at the time was martial law, which was for our safety. But once the National Guard and the police left the areas as far as preventing people from returning to the structures, then it was one of no one in certain areas could get building permits, or they had to follow certain guidelines. Then it changed. Restrictions changed almost on a daily basis when you went to the offices of the different departments. people were confused amongst the departments.
So, Linda, is this a case of a city encountering a flood on a scale that it's never encountered before, and there naturally being some chaos, some organization that's not as good as it might be? Or it seems to me that what I'm hearing from you is some overarching plan to move out this neighborhood or many of the inhabitants, residents of the neighborhood.
I think that if there was much confusion. People had never faced anything of this magnitude, and therefore they were amongst each other not even sure what the plan should be. And once, thanks to Stephen's book, it doesn't just give one sector of the city that was decision makers, but then it comes back and talks about what the citizens were dealing with, the helplessness, the confusion, but the trust. As an American citizen, we always trust our government, and most of this area was laden with veterans from several wars. So the first thing you do is you turn to your local, state, federal government for assistance and guidance. And whether or not there was any sinister plan, I don't go quite that far. But what I think was these plans were already set in place in April and May of 2008, prior to the flood. And when this disaster hit and the magnitude of it over the 10 square miles, this opened up an opportunity for what it would have taken years to achieve, now could be moved along more rapidly.
Okay, 26 months later, we have a minute before we take a break. Linda Seeger, 26 months later, how would you describe the recovery at this point in Cedar Rapids?
Disappointing for the homeowners and the residents, for the other areas from the downtown area and businesses, a little more optimistic, but still a lot of disappointment.
So that's one of the focuses of the book, is that perhaps the city is being blamed, I see, by some because too much focus was given on the downtown to revitalize the downtown, get it clicking again, and not enough on the residents, and you share that.
I do. I think it was more cosmetic at first and then worry about the outlying residential areas.
Okay, when we come back, we'll talk to Gary Ficken, owner of Bim Ritter Sportswear in Cedar Rapids. His business was affected by the flood of 08. We'll have him tell the story of how his small business was flooded. Also, his overview as president of the Cedar Rapids Small Business Recovery Group. Talk about how that small business sector in Cedar Rapids, affected by the flood, is recovering. We'd also like to hear from you this hour. Were you affected by the floods of 08 in Cedar Rapids in the area? How's your recovery? Do you think the city, state, federal government responded well? Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us as well. We're on Twitter at IPR Talk. And when we come back, we continue with our look back at the floods of 2008 in Cedar Rapids. A little later in the hour, Oakville will look at that city and how it's recovering. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Were you affected by the floods of 26 months ago? Yes, it's already been 26 months since those dramatic and horrible floods of 2008 that affected Cedar Rapids in such a great way, along with a number of other communities. This hour, we're focusing on Cedar Rapids. A little later in the hour, Oakville in southeast Iowa, a town that was pretty much destroyed by those floods when the Iowa River went out of its banks. Joining us this hour, Stephen Lyons, author of The 1,000-Year Flood, Linda Seeger, a homeowner who was affected by the floods, who has become a community activist because of the floods. Gary Ficken, owner of Bim Ritter Sportswear in Cedar Rapids, president of the Cedar Rapids Small Business Recovery Group. You can tell us your story as well this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Gary Ficken, let's turn to you now. Bim Ritter Sportswear in Cedar Rapids, how... tell us its story, your business's story, when the floods arrived in 2008.
Well, I think we were, like most businesses, we were totally caught off guard. You know, kind of what we were told was to plan for the worst. And in that particular time period, 1993 was the worst. And So we planned for that, and back then our parking lot got a trickle of water.
In 93, during those floods.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's what we planned for. And what ended up happening was the water in our parking lot was 11 feet deep, and the water throughout all 25,000 square feet in our business was about 6.5 feet deep.
Any time to remove merchandise?
No. Here again, we got lucky in that we removed our server. That was the best thing that happened to us, so we could reinstruct where we were at the time of the flood. But no, between inventory and machinery, we took a $1.4 million uninsured loss.
Wow. How's the recovery been since then for your business?
It's a double-edged sword. The way for a business to recover is to get back in business as quick as possible to start generating revenues. But obviously without insurance money, without any federal aid to the business community after a flood immediately following it, you either find somebody that's willing to loan you money or do it yourself or a combination of the above. So it's a painful process to get back in business, and then we sit and wait and see if any aid comes down the line and see what number of businesses can survive the new debt load that they have to carry.
So give us your critique of government assistance to the flood victims, business victims.
I think for the business community, it's incredibly frustrating. It seems to take, you take common sense.
What went wrong? Was it just mismanagement or just a lack of desire to give this money out for some reason?
Well, I think in some cases, in the federal government, there is no program out there other than SBA loans, but there is no aid program out there specifically set up to help the business community in times of disaster, even though disaster happens in this country many times, year after year after year. So they take programs that money is potentially available, but they're CDBG funds, which are set up for really non-disaster type activities, and then you're trying to put, square pegs into round holes, and you get involved with government red tape, and you sit here more than 2 years later and wonder, where is the promised aid that has been allocated but doesn't hit the street?
What do you think of this term that Linda Seeger used, economic cleansing, used in the book, quoted in the book, Stephen Lyons wrote? Does that extend into the business community at all?
Oh, sometimes you wonder. But I think in every study that's been made for business, it is much more economically, makes much more sense, both in a time frame and in a cost perspective, to bring back existing businesses as opposed to let them wither on the vine and then spend even more money to recruit and bring in replacement businesses. So it's a fine line, but you need to bring these businesses back.
Okay, we're looking for stories of flood recovery, the flood of 08, and the recovery in the 26 months since then. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Kathy joining us from Cedar Rapids. Good afternoon, Kathy. How were you affected by the flood of 08?
Well, we were fortunate. It was only our basement, but my neighbors had been affected by the fact that when we the legislature allowed us to vote on they voted on a special measure so that the city of Cedar Rapids could allow the citizens to have a local option sales tax vote, and we voted on it so that 90% of the money collected with a 1 cent sales tax could be used for the acquisition and rehabilitation of flood damaged housing. And it passed here in Cedar Rapids, and after it passed, I live right across from the river, about a block from it. We found out that none of the money was going to go into what the city termed the greenway or the construction zone. So my neighbors, if they didn't have any of their own money, which most of them didn't have a good savings, you know, live paycheck to paycheck, they lost their homes, even though we had voted on this money, because it wasn't the Corps of Engineers. The Corps of Engineers' plan was to build the levee on the river, and the city wants to build it further in and make some nice parks, and so they refused to give any money to anyone in those two areas. And the mayor said, Ron Corbett said, he wouldn't put a dime into any home in those areas, said it was a waste of taxpayer money. But just recently, they started giving away $10,000 for lost, excuse me, for personal possession. So I guess, you know, now they'll buy you a TV set, but they won't help you fix your home to put it in.
Kathy, hold on. Let's go to Stephen Lyons. Does it sound familiar to you, Stephen?
It does sound. I remember when the tax was passed, and there was a lot of grumbling about it, that the money may not go to the right places. I want to follow up a little bit on the business side. You also have to realize that this flood hit at just a few months before the worst economic downturn we've had since the Great Depression. There were a lot of people thinking, and money was loaned out to small businesses around Christmas of 08 into 09, into the new year, that there would be this holiday bump in sales that would help and reestablish some of the businesses. Well, that didn't happen. You know, there was not a great holiday bump throughout the nation. It was a very horrible recession. We're still trying to come out of it. So that further hurt business quite a bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Lyons, one of the most powerful passages in your book is when you write about the day of the first anniversary of the flood in the Time Check neighborhood. Can you quickly recall that experience in the 2 minutes that we have before our break?
Oh, certainly. The 1 year anniversary was really part of the whole public relations effort to say we're back. Cedar Rapids is back. We're going to be better than ever and stronger than ever, without really knowing the reality of it. And so many people that I interviewed and talked to did not attend any of the 1 year anniversaries because people were still hurting. They were still out of their homes. They were still disrupted, living in FEMA trailers, whatever. So going to that event along the river with the downtown skyline behind you was a bit surreal, because all the officials got up there, said all the right things. You had the congressman come up there and say the right things, the mayor, everybody, Jim Prosser, who was the city manager at the time. But I looked around the crowd. There was nobody there that was from those neighborhoods, except for Ron Sims, who was from Cedar Valley, and he made quite a speech that pretty much said it as it was, that we're not back. We're not even close to being back, and people are hurting in this city.
Stephen, hang on. We've got just a minute before the break, and you're going to be with us in the second half hour. I want to get a quick comment from Linda, possibly from Gary. Linda, when will Cedar Rapids be back?
I think Cedar Rapids is going to be back probably 20 years from now. It's going to be a long, slow process, and not all of the dreams are going to be fulfilled. But the people will be here, and that's basically what Cedar Rapids was in the beginning, is its people, and they will bring this city back to the status it was.
Gary
Ficken,
thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. Gary Ficken, very quickly, when will the business community in Cedar Rapids be back? We have to say goodbye to you in just a moment.
Well, I think the critical time for us is at the 3 to 4 year mark. How many businesses can withstand the new debt loads? That will tell the tale on the business side.
3 to 4 years after the flood or from now?
Yes, after the flood.
Okay, we'll check in a couple of years at the latest. Gary Ficken, president of the Cedar Rapids Small Business Recovery Group, thank you for joining us. Linda Seeger, thank you as well for joining us in this first half hour. We're looking for your stories of the flood of 2008, if it affected you. How has your recovery been? How do you judge the reaction of the city, state, and federal government in responding to them? We want to hear your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our discussion continues after a few minutes break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow in this program, in an archive encore edition of this program, we talk my conversation with Theodore Roszak. In 1969, Roszak wrote the award-winning social commentary, The Making of a Counterculture. And we listened to a conversation about his latest work, a call to arms for the same generation called The Making of an Elder Culture, in which Roszak suggests ways in which baby boomers can uniquely transform our society, picking up on the ideals they formed in the 1960s. An encore edition of our program, The Exchange, tomorrow, Tuesday. Today, we're looking back at the floods of 2008 through the eyes of author Stephen Lyons. His new book, The 1,000-Year Flood, looks back on these epic events 2 years ago, 26 months ago to be more specific, and how the city of Cedar Rapids has attempted to rebound from that devastation. Stephen Lyons joining us by phone, and also joining our conversation now, the flood recovery director of the city of Cedar Rapids, Greg Ierley. Good afternoon, Greg.
Hey, good afternoon.
Great to have you with us. This is interesting. You recounted it also in Stephen Lyons' book. Originally, you did not want to have this flood recovery director title, and you listed in the book a number of reasons why you really didn't want this. The last of these 13 reasons was this just doesn't make any sense. So how did you arrive at a change of heart and become the director of flood recovery at Cedar Rapids?
Well, I think there's a real need in our community to look ahead. I know Stephen's book, from those who've read it, said it does a very good job talking about what's happened. And I know we've probably had some conversation here earlier in the hour where we've looked back. But I needed to be involved, I felt, to look ahead and provide that optimism of, you know, what's out ahead of us in Cedar Rapids. And I have to say it's been the most challenging position I've ever encountered in my life, but it's also the most rewarding position. And the people that we meet in the community, homeowners, business owners, and all the great people that we have here that work in the city that are very dedicated to trying to move forward from this flood recovery, I have to say, it'll be an experience that we all hope to get through as quickly as possible.
Many of those people listening right now, I want to reach out to them. Have you tell us your story if you were affected by the floods of 08 in Cedar Rapids? How's your recovery been? Tell us a little bit of your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Give us your perspective, Greg Ierley. Where does Cedar Rapids stand in terms of flood recovery, the strengths, the weaknesses as you see them?
Where we stand is we're about on the third inning of a nine-inning game. We're still in the early stages of recovery, and we're to the point now that we're really just starting to look ahead of what are the next steps. So we're in the process of our acquisition program for homes.
Acquisition, in other words, the buyout program.
That is correct.
So some property owners are getting a buyout with federal money from the Community Development Block Grant Program. How many properties receive a buyout?
Well, we have a total of about 1,200 properties that that we believe will participate. To date, 988 properties for the CDBG acquisition program have participated. And of those 988, we have 514 offers as of this week out on the street.
Are all of those 1,200 some houses, the 900 some that have taken up on the offer, are they all still standing, or do we have many of them demolished?
Many of those are 450 homes are demolished. Some of those came from the original acquisition program through FEMA, but we're in the middle of what are called our imminent threat demolitions, and we're scrambling to get those done. We're supposed to have them done by the end of this month, but it looks like we're going to be filing for another extension. So to answer your question, 450 of those homes are down as we speak.
Mm-hmm. So the city of Cedar Rapids is scrambling, plans to file for an extension because of the recent wet weather putting a delay on these demolitions, right?
Yeah, that's one of the primary factors. We've lost 17 demolition days, and also we've had some hang-ups on the State Historical Preservation Office has to clear each home prior to being demoed. And we can't do any environmental remediation in those homes until we have that clearance letter.
What is your sense on the vibe you're getting from FEMA in granting this extension to the funding?
Well, we're going to have to justify the reason why. Sometimes the FEMA rules are written in a more hurricane-centric climate where you have the option of working year-round to recover from a disaster. And that's simply not the case, obviously, in the Midwest, as we have a difficult time from December through March to get a lot done. So we're going to have to file for an extension to get through that imminent threat demolition. and we'll continue to do our CDBG demolitions throughout the winter.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense, though, if this extension is a matter of course for FEMA or if it's something out of the ordinary?
Extensions happen in all disasters commonly. It doesn't mean that they're just granted without any documentation or justification. We'll have to provide both of those to get that extension.
How much money are we talking about?
The difference in money is about $5 million for getting that money from FEMA. We can get that money from another funding source potentially, but it's best that we use federal dollars that are available for that.
Okay. You have not filed for the extension yet. So what's the timeline? When would you file? When would you potentially hear back?
We will be filing probably this week, and we obviously have to hear back before the end of the month.
Okay. Let's go to one of our callers. Tell us your flood story from 2008 and how you've recovered in the 26 months since those dramatic floods from 2008. Kevin is joining us from Waterloo. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, I've got some friends living out there. I really think this whole thing needs to be really looked at closely because some people's houses are being demolished and they haven't been paid for them. There's not been any. I don't see how they can legally do that.
Okay. We can perhaps get the flood recovery director to clear this up. What is the procedure for having a house demolished? Are there people out there having houses demolished without having been compensated?
What it is he's correct that people have not received payment for their house, and in some cases their homes have been demolished. Prior to demolishing a home, we receive both a consent to enter and then a consent to demolish. And that's how we receive that permission to go ahead and demolish. And there are people that are in the voluntary acquisition program who have volunteered for a buyout but have withdrawn their consent to demolish their home. And those homes won't be demolished.
Mm-hmm. And how do people arrive at the buyout, the figure?
Well, for every individual, it's a different situation, but the baseline figure is we used 107% of their pre-flood assessed value as the basis to begin the valuation of their home. Mm-hmm. But what a person qualifies for at the end of their buyout is based on their individual circumstances.
Sir, are there certain communities that they're not allowing any rebuilding at all? And who has that final authority for demolishing the house, city council or the owner?
If they're part of the voluntary acquisition program, the homeowner has the right not to have that house demolished until they sell that home. And then that home then becomes property of the city of Cedar Rapids. And keep in mind that the city is just starting a new rehabilitation program, and we're pretty excited by the amount of interest that we have in that program. We identified approximately 475 of these acquired homes that they potentially could be rehabilitated. And that program is right now, we've taken applications, and staff is going through and processing those applications. And it appears we have about 30 interested different builders and contractors that can come in and rehab some of these properties in place, and a handful may need to be moved. But apparently we have about probably 130 to 150 homes right now that contractors are interested in rehabilitating in place.
Greg Ierley with us, flood recovery director for the city of Cedar Rapids. Also with us, Stephen Lyons, author of The 1,000-Year Flood. 1-866-780-9100, the toll-free number to participate in our conversation. A few more minutes when we turn our focus to Oakville in just a few minutes. Let's squeeze in this caller, Jeff from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead. We have a couple more minutes. We're going to shift our focus in a minute, but go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to comment on a couple different things. Because one, I think it's important to understand not to finger point at all these different things. It's been 2 years, and I think we need to get past that. And I also commend the good director for his efforts on trying to reestablish some guidelines and measures and things to do. But I'd also like to complain a little bit about the heavy-handedness of the city, and in particular the code enforcement side of it, especially directly after the event, the flood. There were some terrible things that went on, and there was only limited amount of money, so that because of the code enforcement heavy-handedness, the mechanical contractors were able to charge an exorbitant amount of fee based on the code enforcement.
Okay, we don't have the
leave enough money for to do the actual rebuilding.
Let's get a quick reaction. Yeah, Jeff, we are running out of time. I want to get a quick reaction from Greg Ierley and then Stephen Lyons before we wind up this segment. Jeff, thanks for your call from Cedar Rapids. Let's go to Greg Ierley. Reaction to that comment?
Well, you know, city staff has been faced with a number of tough choices based on information that they've been given. And I believe they are acting in the best interest of the public as they know the information at that time. And I commend city staff for their efforts, whether it's code, our community development department, our public works department, not only for the reaction to the flood physically, but in the months after, in the years after. These people are dedicated and come to work every day trying to move us forward away from the disaster and looking ahead at our future. And I again, commend that staff for their work.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. Stephen Lyons, so before we end this segment, I want to go to you with a few remarks to sum this up. Your book was written, if it had something to add to it that didn't meet publication date that has turned up in the meantime, what would you add?
I would add that it's very gut-wrenching to have these homes taken down in the time check area. I mean, I have great faith in Greg and he's a great flood director. I can't imagine being in that position. But the gut-wrenching effect of taking down these homes, I understand that some of the people disconnecting gas lines and stuff were actually heckled or, you know, had confrontations with the residents that are still there. I think that would be the next chapter in the book is to talk about that a little more. Obviously, you can't put this neighborhood back together. It's going to be different, and Greg acknowledged that when I talked to him as well. But I think you can acknowledge that people are hurting, and before you move on, you have to acknowledge that loss, and then you can move on. And I think it's very important to realize the human cost of this flood. It's nobody's fault but the rain, but still, there's a point I think that Cedar Rapids has skipped over in its effort to come back. And that's the human side. It's the people in these neighborhoods who have been affected.
Greg Ierley, how long will you be flood recovery director? When will we not need a flood recovery director in Cedar Rapids, do you foresee?
You know, I don't know that. We talk about that quite a bit. Hopefully, the sooner the better, that we can move on and, you know, really turn this into long-term city operations.
Five years, 10 years, am I in the ballpark?
We'll be recovering from the flood that long, but my position won't be needed. I would assume 1 or 2 years, 2 years being the very maximum, that we'll be able to finish operationalizing most of these issues, which they already are.
Okay. Greg Ierley, thank you very much for joining us, Flood Recovery Director for the City of Cedar Rapids. Thank you, Greg.
You bet.
And I want to thank you very much, Stephen Lyons, author of the new book, The Thousand-Year Flood, Destruction, Loss, Rescue, and Redemption Along the Mississippi River. Stephen, thank you for joining us. And gut-wrenching, you mentioned that word a couple times, a lot of gut-wrenching stories about the people affected by this flood. Thank you for capturing those and for sharing some of the book on the air with us.
My pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Stephen Lyons, The 1,000-Year Flood. And now we want to use the final minutes of our hour today to get an update on another community that was impacted in a major way by the floods of 2008, the southeastern town of Oakville, devastated by the Iowa River in 2008, where 450 residents prior to the flood has now become 150 residents. Joining us now by phone, Benita Grooms, the mayor of Oakville. Good afternoon to you, Benita. Mayor Grooms. Mayor Grooms, good afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Just a reminder of what happened in Oakville when the Iowa River flooded the town.
A reminder is that we had 6 to 7 foot of water in almost most of the houses here, and everyone was impacted by the flood in some way or another. The rural area actually had more water than that. It was up to the second story of the homes out in the rural area, because that's the flow of the river. The fall of the river goes that way. So you could figure 6 to 7 foot came into Oakville.
Let's say I was well acquainted with Oakville prior to the flood. I'd driven through it many times, perhaps didn't live there, but I knew the town well. Would I recognize it now driving through the town?
Oh, yeah. Yes, you would. We're neat and clean and cleaned up. The demolition has taken out all of the unsafe housing, and all of the mobile homes had to go, of course. So we are now in the rehab stage of redeveloping and reestablishing homes.
I guess also what I meant was that not only being neat and cleaned up and certain places destroyed, were any landmarks removed? Is the character of the town been changed? I would have to think so, with a pre-flood residence, 450, now down to 150.
Yes, it has. It really has. Yes, the White Elephant Tavern that was the local place there, it is gone, and another building on Main Street has gone. We have Tri-Oak is still in business and going great guns, and we have not come back that way. The community room here, the community building, is really the only action in town. Mm-hmm. And if you want to purchase anything, you can purchase the soda from the machine out in front.
Now, those residents that fled because of the flood, moved because of the flood, do you know of any of them that want to come back now that the recovery has taken place in a large part?
Some have come back and had their homes are now restored, and they are back in them. And so that's okay. But the others, many of them will not come back. Some of the elderly, they, you know, probably would have been moving on in 5 years anyway. Mm. But it's still home to them. They come for visits, and when we have any gathering, why, they're here. But as far as living here, their homes were either taken out completely, and now they rent. And it's a different town entirely.
I understand recently Governor Culver and 2nd District Congressman Dave Loebsack were in Oakville to announce a $10 million grant for a new bridge.
Right.
Tell us about this bridge and the importance of it to Oakville.
Well, the importance is the one that we have now is old and in pretty sad shape, really. I think the lifespan was another 5 years, 5 to 10 years.
This was spanning the Iowa River. Was it affected directly by the flood?
That's the one that when they showed the pictures of the three cabins that went under the bridge.
Right, caught under the bridge.
Yep, under the bridge, came out as sticks on the other side. And so it takes abuse that way. In the wintertime, with ice jams, we've had ice jam that sticks up above the rail on that bridge. So it really has had a lot of abuse from weather, river.
Mm-hmm. When do you expect this? Our time is getting away from us a little bit, Mayor, but when do you expect the construction to be completed?
Probably not begun for another couple of years. We have to get past the environmental, which is the Indiana brown bat that we have here that breeds in our trees. And so probably it won't begin for 2 years, 1 to 2 years. So hopefully, you know, within 4 or 5 years we'll have it.
Quickly, before we have to go, when you look back over the 26 months since the flood, what would you say are the most important driving forces for getting things done in Oakville, this recovery?
Oh, I think just survival and getting people back to home. And that was mine, and Tri-Oak, the business here, and some of the farmers that are still in business and still have homes here. it's just the fact of community and wanting to be where you have always been or want to be.
Volunteerism has been a big part of this recovery, hasn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes, yeah. And still is. We have volunteers not this week, but we will be having them again in the middle of September.
Coming from whereabouts?
I think we've had 40 states represented here.
40 states. Volunteers from 40 states. They continue to come 26 months later.
Yes, yes.
What keeps them coming back?
Well, we're just nice people. No.
I didn't doubt it for a minute.
You walked right into that one.
I sure did.
I think because things are organized, and when they come to work, they have it all lined up for them. They don't have to sit around and wonder when they're going to have the supplies. Tanya Lance is always in the coordinating. And with Lend a Hand in Pennsylvania, their help, she sends in the pictures, and they tell what's needed in the house. So.
Okay. Benita Grooms, one of the very nice people who happens to be the mayor also of Oakville. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand available. On-demand audio, that is, available at iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.